Tomorrow's Election Day, many voters may be turning out for the very first time. Whether they've just turned 18, they're new citizens, or they haven't felt civically engaged until now. Here's Alex Sonskovich. He just became a citizen this fall.
It's a big change to know that my voice is going to be heard and to feel the weight of that responsibility as well, to get out, become informed, participate.
Plus, here's a quick civic quiz for you. You're not registered yet. You don't speak English. You have a felony conviction. Does that mean you can't vote?
People think they cannot vote if they have felony convictions. This is false. You can't vote.
That's Danielle Chenoweth speaking to the Illinois Newsroom. We'll dispel that and some other common misconceptions before you head to the voting booth. We're getting you ready for your ballot. All coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay with us. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. I hope everyone had a great weekend. Today, we are gearing up for Election Day, which, in case you've been hiding under a rock, is tomorrow. We're going to be talking about how some Illinois voters do and don't have easy voter access, including people with disabilities or who speak other languages. And we're going to end our hour talking to some new citizens who are going to be voting for the first time. Are you ready to vote? We've got lots of information at our website to help you out. If you head to 21stshow.org, our elections page link is right at the top. We've got voter ballot guides, candidate interviews, lots of stuff there for you. When it comes to voting, though, there are a lot of myths about what to do, how to do it right, who's allowed. So we're going to play a little game right now on the 21st. We're going to play a little true or false, and we've invited a couple of civic pros to help us set us straight. So we're going to play true and false. Don't worry. We're going to ask you to call in, but we promise we will not buzz you off the air. If you have questions, you can give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can also tweet to 21stshow. Our civic pros who are here to help us straight and answer this true or false are Kimberly Cronick, who's the Director of Engagement and Educational Outreach at our home station, WILL. She's also a deputy registrar for Champaign County. That means she's been trained in how to register people to vote. She's with me in our Urbana studios. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi, Nyla. Happy to be here.
Thank you for being with us. Stephanie Whiteside is also with us. She's a reporter with the Illinois Newsroom Collaborative and WSIU in Carbondale, where she's on the line from now. Hi, Stephanie. Welcome to the 21st.
Hi, it's great to be here virtually.
So Kimberly, you and Stephanie and a lot of other folks at our partners at the Illinois Newsroom made a really fun video. So we should say our idea of this we took from you guys because you did this whole true and false quiz. We're going to tweet that out. It'll be at our website too. But you've been talking to voters all this year, and I wonder what you're hearing from people. Is there a common theme when it comes to questions or misconceptions people have about voting?
A lot of questions. People want to know how to find out to look at their ballot and local information. How do I research candidates? How do I research my ballot? I want to see my ballot before I get into the voting booth. I don't want to be surprised. And that's everywhere from real young voters who are voting for the first time, people who are high school students, to people who have been voters and consider themselves someone who would always vote in an election. People need to know that.
And so regular listeners to our program will be hearing, have heard about a voter guide that I've been talking about. Kimberly, you helped put that together.
I did. I talked to county clerks, four different county clerks in our area, and came up with frequently asked questions that people had about voting, especially first-time voters. And we've got pretty much all the answers to all the questions you might have right on our website.
Right. And so if you go to 21stshow.org, off to the right, there's a ballot. It says Illinois Voter Guide. Well, if you click on that, not only will you be able to, if you put your address in, you'll be able to see your ballot ahead of time. And we also have some of the, as Kimberly said, some of the frequently asked questions. So let's get through that. Let's go to some of the misconceptions. As I said, we're going to do this game show style, so don't be alarmed if you hear our true or false buzzers. Kimberly, let me start with you. We record here at the University of Illinois, and there's lots of college students here who come from other places. The same is true at other college towns. Students assume they can't vote. Is that true or false?
Right. That is false. Okay. All you have to do
in case you couldn't tell from that sound.
You register to vote at your college address, and you have to have lived at that address for 30 days prior to the election. So that's all you have to do to be able to vote if you're new to this community because of college or university, or you can vote where you came from. You got to make a choice.
So the students, so first-year students especially, have a choice to make. if they have wanted to. Well, really, it's really if they're going to vote or not at this point,
right?
Because if you haven't decided by now, your only option would be to vote in person tomorrow here.
Right, exactly. You can register and vote in person today or tomorrow if you live in Champaign County, and in most counties in the state, you can still do that. You just have to decide, is it where you reside, where you live now, or is it where you came from to on your way to college? You just make that choice.
So that's college students. Stephanie, let's move to another area that I think a lot of people assume that you can't vote if you've been convicted of a felony. True or false? Stephanie, I love our...
That
is false. I take it.
Yes, in Illinois, you can vote even if you have been convicted of a felony and you've served your time, and you're encouraged to vote. So don't let that stop you. You know, if you've heard that you can't, you're probably hearing information that is based in other states. In Illinois, you can, so go out and vote.
If you have questions you would like us to address, you can give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can also tweet to 21STShow. Okay, so when you're thinking about people who can vote, that's how there's the how to vote. And Stephanie, let's just talk about the whole idea of registration. Is it too late to register?
No, it is not too late to register. So in Illinois, you can register up to Election Day. There are some things you need to know, though, if you haven't registered and you're going to want to do it today or tomorrow. The thing is, your county will have sites designated for registration. In some counties, that may be any polling place. In other counties, there may be only one or two places. I know in Jackson County here, we have, I think, two. So if you're, what you're going to want to do is call your local county clerk's office, and they'll be able to tell you where you can register today or tomorrow.
Okay. And Kimberly, what do you need to bring when you if you're registering for the first time, what do you need to bring with you?
Right. Well, first, just to clarify, you have to be a U.S. citizen, and you must be 18 years of age or older. And you need some kind of ID, so a state ID, a state driver's license.
A government ID, you mean.
A government ID, but you can bring something else. You can have, you can register to vote with your Social Security, last four numbers of your Social Security.
So it doesn't have to be a photo ID, is
what
you're saying.
It does not have to be. It's preferred, but the state law does not require you to have a photo ID. And if you have an ID that doesn't have your address on it, you can have like a utility bill, you could have a credit card, a rental agreement, those things, a hunting license. Those, a fishing license, utility bill, those things will allow you to register to vote. So you need one form of ID, and you need, that ID has to have your current address on where you were registered to vote.
Okay, we're addressing voter myths and misconceptions. We're playing our fun true-false game here, and we've invited you into the conversation. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455 if you have questions or comments about this ahead of tomorrow. Let's go to a caller, Danielle. Danielle, and this is a Danielle, actually, that was in the video that the Illinois Newsroom did. Hi, Danielle. Welcome to the 21st.
Hey, thanks.
And so, Danielle, did you have a question or a comment about just this voting process as we're talking about people who can vote and cannot?
Yeah, thanks so much. And I really appreciated the piece. I thought it was very clear and accurate. And I'm glad that public media is getting the word out about how folks can exercise their right to vote. I'm the Cunningham Township Supervisor. It's an elected position. We run a public aid office that provides for the poorest of the poor in Urbana. And we're currently working with over 75 homeless households. Many of those households include women and children. And we've actually seen those numbers go up. So we're seeing an increase in the number of homeless in our community. So what we've been doing is we've been educating our program participants about their right to vote. And we provide a legal address for the homeless to register to vote. And I guess one of the comments after your video went out, I've received personally three phone calls this last Saturday from folks who are homeless about their difficulty in voting. And actually only one of those three people was able to vote. And that's only because I showed up in person and argued with the election judge about the law. So I guess I'm calling just to educate folks who are going to the polls who may see this come up, that they should know that the homeless have a Bill of Rights in the state of Illinois that provides for them to have the right to vote. they can use the township, the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen, or shelter as their address. And they can actually register and vote at the same time, which is what is in your video. The issue that we saw was that an election judge told a voter in front of me who was homeless that he could not vote because his ID was from Springfield. This is absolutely false, and I do not know who was training the election judges to say this, but this is like election judge 101. Half of the people in this county, because we have such a migratory population, don't have voter IDs from this county, but you can vote in this county. It does not matter if your voter ID says an out-of-county place. Mm. You just have to provide a form of ID, a proof of your residence or your address. In this case, this gentleman, who's never voted in his lifetime, was voting because he's so upset with the hatred and the targeting of the homeless. And he said, I put aside my lunch at the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen and came here to vote because it's so important.
Wow. Well, Danielle, thank you for that.
He could not vote.
Okay.
And I had to explain to the judge that he has a letter from my office verifying his homelessness and that he can receive mail at our township address.
Okay. Well, thank you for, I appreciate you calling. Thank you for sharing that story with us. I suspect that folks in the WILL newsroom will be continuing to look into this story. But Kimberly, just to reiterate what Danielle is saying, the laws around whether or not you're homeless should not affect your ability to vote.
Exactly.
As long as you need to be a U.S. citizen and 18 years or older. And those are the requirements for voting.
Yeah, and not incarcerated. And as Danielle said, you just need to be able to provide an address where you can receive mail. And as she said, there are nonprofits that will allow homeless people to use their address for mail. And then you need some form of ID. And then you are, since 1992, the state of Illinois has made it a law that people who are homeless can register to vote and vote in the state of Illinois.
And so Danielle did bring up an interesting point. When you have a problem at a poll, what are you supposed to do?
Well, you should call your local election authority. If you can't get it resolved there, you can cast a provisional ballot. You're supposed to be allowed to do that if there's some dispute. And you can, like I said, have somebody call the local election authority, have somebody with you, cast a provisional vote. Those are some things you can do.
Okay. We're speaking with Kimberly Chronic, who's the Director of Engagement and Educational Outreach here at WILL. And she's also a deputy registrar for Champaign County, which means she's been trained. She's done courses on how to register people to vote. Stephanie Whiteside is also with us from SIU in Carbondale. Stephanie, let's go back to our buzzer for a second, and let's just do a little true-false here. And I know the answer to this, but I think a lot of people do. If you're in line late and the polls close, tough? Is that true or false? Stephanie, that's a very clear false, right?
That's a very clear false. So if you are in line by the time the polls close, you are still entitled to vote. So don't leave your line. Just stay there. And you can vote. And like Kimberly said, if somebody tries to tell you that you can't, if that's not true, then you can call your county board of elections, and you can also call the state board of elections if you can't get through to your county or if you think that they're not giving you accurate information. So, and I believe there's a national hotline as well that will be monitoring voting during the midterms. So you have other places that you can call if for some reason you can't get through to your local election board.
Right. And Stephanie, but when we think about time, it's such an issue. If you didn't vote early or if you have to work, are you out of luck?
No, you're not out of luck at all. So in Illinois, your employer is required to give you 2 hours of time off to vote. So, you know, you will need to talk to them. Your employer can specify the hours that they're going to give you off, and you should give them a day's notice in advance. So if you think you're going to need that time, go talk to your boss today. But yes, you are legally entitled to 2 hours off to go vote.
And so 1 day's advance notice is required. Employers can choose the hours, but you are allowed to have 2 hours off in Illinois to be allowed to vote.
Yes.
By the way, that hotline number Stephanie mentioned, specifically for Illinois, We've had them on the show in the past. It's the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. They're a nonpartisan organization. They have a hotline. They have lawyers that will be staffing that, that are already staffing it now and will be staffing that from tomorrow all through from when the polls open and through they close. So this is a number you should write down if you have problems. It's 866-OUR-VOTE. That's 866-OUR-VOTE. So that's the hotline number to remember. So let me just end by on one more note. When it all comes down to it, and Kimberly, I'm going to have you answer this one. Does one vote even matter when we're talking about a state election or the midterm?
Absolutely.
That's elections, a yes.
Races have been called by one vote. And so absolutely, you're voting both locally and statewide offices. So it's really important that everybody vote who's eligible to vote.
I want to thank Kimberly Cronick for being with us. She helped put together that Illinois voter guide and those questions. Again, if you go to 21stshow.org, we've compiled all of our election information for you. We've even put together a really short podcast of all the interviews we did and we aired last week of all of the candidates for governor. We spoke to Governor Rauner, J.B. Pritzker, and Sam McCann, as well as Cash Jackson. We spoke to all of them and candidates for treasurer, for comptroller, for attorney general. And we put that all into a 15-minute podcast. So if you go to our website, 21stshow.org, if you haven't made up your mind yet, you can listen to the candidates in their own words. You can find our voter guide there where you can plug in your ballot and get that ahead of time as well. Just head to 21stshow.org. Stephanie Whiteside, I want to thank as well. She's a reporter with the Illinois Newsroom and WSIU in Carbondale. Stephanie, Kimberly, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it. Thank you, Nyla.
Thank you.
Support for the 21st comes from University of Illinois Press, hosting the Association of University Press's annual book, jacket, and journal show in the Link Gallery at the School of Art and Design, November 5th through the 16th. University of Illinois Press, celebrating 100 years.
Thanks for tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. You've heard it everywhere by now. Election day is tomorrow, and you don't have to be registered to vote. You can do that tomorrow at your polling place. And if you haven't registered, just make sure to bring two forms of identification, one with your current address. But what's it like if you have a disability that might make it hard to vote, especially if you're in an unfamiliar polling place? Those barriers might be one reason why 2.2 million eligible voters with disabilities didn't vote in 2016. Joining me now to discuss this issue is Sarah Blahovic. She's a disability vote organizer with the National Council on Independent Living. Their organization is based in D.C., where Sarah's on the line with from now. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the 21st.
Hi.
So, Sarah, can I just ask you first, when we say voting with disabilities, what does that mean? What population are we talking about?
We're actually talking about what is considered one of the largest minorities, if not the largest minority in the country. The Centers for Disease Control, their new statistic is that one in four American adults has a disability. And that is very loosely defined. That is someone who has anything that is considered to be cause a barrier, cause an impairment to living activities in at least one area of daily life. So that can be learning disabilities, mobility, vision, chronic illness, mental health conditions. There's a lot that falls under this label. So it's a very diverse group. And whenever it comes to talking about the voting barriers or the voting participation of people with disabilities, it really can vary depending on what person you're talking about, what part of the population of the disability community.
And I think a lot of people think when it comes to this population of people who have disabilities that mail-in options should make things easier for people. Is that accurate?
It does for a portion of it, but actually it doesn't for another group. One person's accommodation can be one person's access barrier. And so the most important thing whenever it comes to voting and having a disability is that we maintain the privacy and independence of everyone's ballot. And so for someone who may be a wheelchair user who has good mobility in their upper body, that might be a great option for them because then they don't have to go to the polling place. But if you have a vision related issue, if you have blindness or low vision, or you have a mobility related disability that makes it difficult to mark your ballot by yourself, it can be very difficult. And then you need to have somebody else mark it for you, or you need to go into the election office to have your ballot get assistance with getting your ballot marked. And if you have a disability that makes it difficult to mark a paper ballot by yourself, it's unlikely that you are able to drive by yourself or have access to that kind of transportation. So especially if you're in a rural area that doesn't have public transportation, or if you live somewhere where there's not reliable transportation options, then you might not even be able to get to that election office. So that's why whenever talking about mail-in ballots, it's not really a cure-all. There's not one cure-all for all access barriers. And that's why we need systems like where there are still polling places. In Colorado, for example, they have mail-in ballots, but they also have frequent voter centers, more than just the one election office per county. So that is the kind of system that we need for it to be truly inclusive and accessible, to make sure that we are encompassing everybody and making sure that we don't simplify the issues of access to just what we think of maybe one or two groups, whenever it can be very, very different depending on what type of disability you have.
Sarah, what when we're thinking about that, what kind of laws are in place at the federal level? Let's start with the federal level first before we get to Illinois. Are there specific laws about how accessible polling places need to be?
Yeah, so the main one is the Help America Vote Act. It was passed in, I believe, 2001, and that mandates that every polling place needs to have at least one accessible option. And that is really important, along with the Americans with Disabilities Act, which mandates that public places are accessible to people with disabilities, of course. And so those two together really are critical for voting access for people with disabilities. And it's frustrating, though, because this is both of these laws are very broad and very important. But whenever it comes to actual compliance, that can be an issue, especially at the state and local level. The issue there is, are people following the law, and how can you get them to do that?
Okay. And so do we know specifically, are there other specific laws in Illinois regarding access?
I'm not sure in Illinois of if there are specific laws regarding access. I'm not actually sure of any laws at the state level anywhere that are specific to voting access.
At any state level, you're saying?
At any state level, no. I've seen Secretary of State's offices and local offices take initiative to really become inclusive and accessible. And that doesn't mean that there aren't any laws out there. It's just that I'm not necessarily aware of any specific state-level laws. Because whenever it comes down to it, HAVA and the ADA really should be doing their job on it. But unfortunately, there's still a big disparity. In 2016, the Government Accountability Office took a survey of polling places and found that 60% still had barriers to voting for people with disabilities.
60%. Wow. So as we're thinking about that, my guest is Sarah Blahovic. She's a disability vote organizer with the National Council on Independent Living based in D.C. Sarah, what are some of the challenges that we should be that folks should be thinking about when we're thinking about our fellow citizens, people who might be disabled? Are there challenges that they are facing that some of us may not have considered?
Oh, absolutely. So the voting process, unfortunately, there can be barriers throughout. one issue is whenever it comes to voter registration, which obviously for many of us not in Illinois or states that have same-day registration, that issue is passed now. But many online voter registration systems aren't accessible to people who use assistive technology like screen readers. A lot of information at the local and even state level isn't accessible on election websites as well, even though it's mandated by Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 that this information is accessible. A lot of times, for example, sample ballots might not be accessible to people with disabilities. And whenever it comes to the actual polling places, there's issues that could be inside and outside. So one issue, obviously, is accessible parking, and this actually came to a head over the weekend. A story went national where a local news reporter parked in an accessible spot and did a story on the news, but they used that the only accessible spot and kept two people with disabilities from voting, including a disabled veteran. So having adequate accessible parking, having the path of travel into the building be accessible. So sometimes buildings aren't even accessible at all, and in that case, people have to do something called curbside voting if they can't get in. But oftentimes, you know, there might be steps into the building in the way that the voters who don't have issues with being able to navigate those stairs are able to go in that way. And someone with a disability might be sent around to a different door that's, you know, in the back of the building. Or if it's in a school, it's a different door and they need someone to escort them through the building, or it's locked and they can't get in. That can be a massive barrier depending on, you know, if that door is constantly manned or you know, what the situation is around an alternative entrance. And then in the polling place as well, of course, long lines can be a barrier. If someone has stamina issues, if they're maybe elderly and have difficulty with that or standing for a long time. And then whenever it comes to inside the polling place, the biggest issue actually is poll worker knowledge, unfortunately. Poll workers may try to tell people how they should vote, or meaning the equipment that they should use, or whether or not they're able to vote, which is illegal. They may not know how the accessible equipment works, or they might not even have it on, which is a situation I've heard of frequently with disabled voters, as they've gone to use the accessible equipment and it's sitting in a corner, isn't turned on. So there can be issues there as well for voters with disabilities.
I also know there's been a hashtag. It's called Crip the Vote on Twitter. As you probably, Sarah, even we're seeing social media help people share their experiences. I just want to note to our audience, to Sarah's point about poll workers, there's a hotline number by the nonpartisan Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, and they're based in Chicago, but they cover the whole state of Illinois. So if you're having problems tomorrow, or even if you're having problems even today voting, at any time you can call 866-OUR-VOTE. I want to thank Sarah Blahovic for being with us, a disability vote organizer with the National Council on Independent Living. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
We know the voting also can be difficult if English isn't your first language. And in Chicago, for example, if your first language is Hindi, Chinese, or Spanish, you can get help with translation. That's required by law. There's also hotlines for example, Polish speakers. I'm joining on the line now by Sik Sun, who's with the organization Korean American Voice. Brandon Lee is also with us with Asian Americans Advancing Justice Chicago, and he's been a poll monitor for more than a decade. Hi, Sik. Hi, Brandon. Thanks for being here.
Hello.
Hi, Nyla. Thanks for having me.
Sik, I wonder if I could start with you. What kind of stigma do you think? Do you think there's a stigma with language access for voters? Do you think a lot of us people assume that, well, if you should speak English well enough to vote?
Yeah, of course. I think that that's very common. So that's why a lot of Korean Americans with a limited English skills are hesitating to go to poll. You know, they don't want to embarrass themselves in front of a lot of English-speaking people.
Right. And when you think about it, I mean, I think sometimes ballots are, as a native English speaker, oftentimes I find ballot language exceptionally confusing. So I imagine it is really important for people to be able to vote in a language they're comfortable with. Right, Sik?
of course, that's, I mean, really important. I mean, for example, I mean, Korean Americans didn't have a voter registration form in Korean. It came out in 2008. Since 2008, I mean, the registration soared. So I think that that proved that, I mean, language support is really important. And also, that's why we started organizing Korean American Early Voting Day. So we asked Korean American voters come to one voting place during early voting days, and we provide language assistance so they can feel comfortable, they can vote easily, and that attracts a lot of Korean American voters, and their turnouts skyrocketed.
Right. We're speaking with Sik Sun, who's on the line from Palatine, who is president of the voting organization Korean American Voice, a nonpartisan group. Brandon, what different languages are available on the ballot depending on where you are in Illinois?
Yeah, so Spanish, Chinese, and Hindi are the languages that are available in different precincts in Illinois. And I should mention Korean as well. So Spanish, Chinese, and Hindi are mandated by the Federal Voting Rights Act, and those precincts are primarily in the Chicago proper, as well as the suburban Cook County. For Korean, that's a language that's available in specific precincts that you know, we were able to advocate for, along with a coalition of Korean organizations, including the Hana Center, that, you know, the thing is Korean didn't reach the threshold that that other languages have.
So, Brandon, this is triggered by the census, right? So when we look at census numbers, and that's why when people talk about how important the census is, this is one of the reasons why, because it kind of gives a sense of how much other languages that we need to print ballots in?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. So Chinese, Asian Indian, Hindi, and Spanish have all met those federal thresholds according to the Census and the Voting Rights Act.
And then there are also hotlines, right? So I mentioned Polish. Like, I assume that's in the Chicago area as well. For Polish-speaking folks, if they need help, they can call hotlines?
Yeah, so those hotlines are part of you know, what's made available by the local election jurisdictions.
Brandon, earlier we were talking about voting by mail if you have a disability, and I think a lot of people like voting by mail regardless of what their status is, because I think it gives them time to sit and think that, you know, with their ballot in the comfort of their home and fill it out. It gives them time to think. Do you think that also is helpful for people if English isn't their first language to do voting by mail?
Yeah, absolutely it is. Like, one of the other provisions in the Voting Rights Act says that you can bring a family member or a neighbor into the voting booth with you to cast your ballot. And I think that, you know, a lot of times that's not the most convenient thing to bring a family member with on election day, or
right, they're probably working,
so,
or
exactly. So having the ability to look over a ballot in your home with your family member, like, that is absolutely a good thing.
Sik, what are you doing tomorrow to help Korean Americans vote? I know you were saying what you've been doing in the run up as well.
Mm-hmm. But I think that I want to briefly comment on what Brandon said. He's mostly when he talked about minority language ballot, he's talking about Cook County, and it's not mandated by government. I mean, a lot of people think that way, but actually a county decides to provide it, they can do it. I mean, I've been working for that Korean ballot. We're trying to reach out to a lot of elected officials. We thought that initially they are mandated by the Justice Department based on census result, but it's not. If a county didn't provide after that threshold, that's when Justice Department came in. But if a county decides to provide in advance, there's no regulation by a Justice Department. So a good example is King County in Washington State. Even though in 2016, the Korean American living there didn't meet that threshold, they decided to provide that Korean language ballot. That's what we are trying to do right now with Cook County.
All right. Well, thanks for a sick son. He's president of KA Voice. I want to thank Brandon Lee as well, a communications coordinator with Asian Americans Advancing Justice. Brandon is also going to be a poll monitor tomorrow. Thanks both of you for being with me. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Natalie.
Coming up, we're going to be ending our hour by hearing from two new citizens who are voting for the first time. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Every year, hundreds of thousands of adults become naturalized American citizens. In 2016, that number was around 750,000 people, and Illinois had the sixth largest number of naturalized citizens among the U.S. Those new citizens are also new voters. As we get ready for Election Day tomorrow, we thought we'd end our hour today spending time with some Illinoisans who are casting their ballot for the very first time. I'm joined now by two of them. Dr. Sunita Singh became a citizen a year and a half ago, along with many members of our family. She was actually on the program then talking about it. She's a physician living in Chicago. This is her first general election she's going to be voting in. Alex Shashkovich is also with us. He became a citizen this September. He's an assistant professor of political science at the University of Illinois. He's with us in Urbana. Alex, Dr. Singh, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And we'd love to hear from those of you who are listening. If tomorrow is your very first election day, tweet us. Our handle is 21STShow. I thought I'd start with both of you by getting a sense of your paths to becoming naturalized citizens. Dr. Singh, with you first, what brought you to the U.S. and to Illinois?
Well, mainly it was better job opportunities, and my husband got a job at the University of Chicago, so that's how we moved to Illinois. And we've been here for the past 17 years, but it took us like 15 years to become citizens.
Okay. And in that 15-year process, when did you start the process of becoming a citizen?
About 10 years before we became actual citizens.
So it took 10 years for you to go through the process, Dr. Singh?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Alex, by the way, you just became a citizen 2 months ago, so congratulations.
Thank you so much.
What brought you to the U.S. and to Illinois?
I originally came to the U.S. for graduate school, so I was down at Rice University in Houston, Texas. And I came to Illinois after I got a job here at the university, after I finished graduate school.
And when did you realize that you wanted to become an American citizen?
So it's funny, it was actually the day after the 2016 election. So I was going to become eligible for becoming a U.S. citizen shortly after that. And I told myself, you know, there's no rush. I'll just become a citizen when I feel ready, when I feel like I'm an American. And I woke up the day after the 2016 election and like, a lot of people in the country, I was surprised by what happened and had some very strong emotions. And the first thought that came into my head is, you know, I really care about this place and I think I need to be able to become involved. So I need to become a citizen.
And so you started, did you start the process then?
I started it the February of 2017, because that's when I was eligible to apply for citizenship.
Okay. And actually, it took, it actually was pretty quick, about a year and a half for you then.
Yeah, about a year and a half, yeah.
Okay. Dr. Singh, what about you? When did you realize you wanted to become an American citizen?
It's probably about 5 years after we had moved here. We had become fairly settled. Both of us, my husband and I, had jobs here, and our kids were going to school and, you know, would have been going to college. So that's when we decided, yes, you know, we do need to become citizens. We loved the way of life here and everything about it. So there's just no doubt about it.
And so you were naturalized. Your naturalization ceremony was about a year and a half ago with Dr. Singh. And I understand your ceremony was actually pretty unique, because I think we often hear about people coming and everybody standing in a big room and doing an oath with lots of other people. Was that what it was like for you?
Not at all, because of my daughter is a lawyer. So she happened to know one of the judges who performs like a private ceremony. So we were able to have a private swearing-in ceremony, and you know, a lot of family and friends were there. So it was really a beautiful experience.
And so did you have other members of your family that also became citizens at the same time, Dr. Singh?
Yes. Yes. My husband and two daughters, all of us were sworn in the same day.
Oh, wow. What was that like?
It was very emotional. It was truly, you know, sort of a dream come true to have this, to all of us to undergo this experience together.
Well, and it was such a long process for you too, right? Because I imagine if you've something you've been working on for a decade?
Yes, yes. And, we had originally come on the H-1B visas and, you know, so it was a very long and, you know, laborious process, but the end results were, it was just what we wanted.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Dr. Sunita Singh, who's a Chicago physician and who became an American citizen, as we're hearing about her naturalization ceremony about a year and a half ago. Helik Shishkovich is with us as well. He is an assistant professor of political science at U of I. He just became a citizen. Alex, so you were talking about what made you, do you feel like that was that moment during the election 2 years ago that really made you want to become an American citizen?
Yeah, I mean, I knew that I was going to do it at some point eventually, but it was really going through the election process as someone who was a green card holder at that time, being a permanent resident, sort of developing that stronger sense of attachment to the country as I was living here for years. And it was that moment after the election that really it sort of struck me how much I care about this country and how much it would mean to me to be able to participate. So I'm really looking forward to voting tomorrow.
And you also teach political science, right?
That's right.
So I imagine there's a little bit of a personal and professional connection here that I imagine you're also, it must be interesting to personally be going through something that is probably something that you study in at an academic level.
Yeah, and I'm specifically a political psychologist, so I study how people form their political opinions and how they decide who to vote for and stuff like that. So when I was doing, ballot research over these last few days and trying to decide who to vote for, a lot of that was going through the back of my mind of, oh, is this process happening? How is this affecting how I'm thinking about things and so on?
Mm-hmm. So Dr. Singh, you've been an American for about a year and a half. Has it felt at all different for the past year and a half being an American citizen based on what it's been like for you for, it's almost 20 years that you've been here, right?
Yes, yes. Yes, it has been very different. In some ways, it has been really wonderful experience. And then, like Alex is saying, the sort of environment over the last 1.5 years has also been sort of frightening too, especially for, I would say, new immigrants and people of color. So, yeah, I'm really excited about voting tomorrow and, making my voice heard as a minority and as a physician, yes.
Mm. We're speaking with Dr. Sunita Singh and Helik Shishkovich. We're talking to them about their becoming new citizens. Alex, does it feel different for you or not really for in the past 2 months being a citizen?
Yeah, it does. I just went with my wife to visit some friends down in Nashville last weekend. And, we were absorbing some of the local culture, going to like honky tonks, getting exposed to music that I don't usually listen to. And as I've been walking around since I became a citizen in these sorts of new settings, I remind myself, like, these are my people now, right? I'm one of them. And so it makes me, I didn't anticipate this, but I feel like a closer sense of attachment to people, who might have different musical preferences than I do or different political preferences than I do and stuff like that. I think it has made a difference in terms of my feeling close to other people. But I've had some of the same kinds of concerns about, the way that immigrants get portrayed in the media and those feelings of hostility sometimes that you get in some of the political rhetoric these days that worry me as well and also sort of motivate me to want to participate.
And I did want to ask you guys about that. I know this is a really big question, but since both of you have mentioned, this is a time, at least I think in modern memory, when we're hearing a lot of vilification of not just new immigrants, but refugees. But I wonder what being an American means to you guys. I know that's a really big question, so I want to give you a minute to answer that. Alex?
Yeah, I mean, I think it gives me sort of like a profound feeling of responsibility to be able to participate in this, you know, great experiment that is the American democracy. It gives me this sense of fellowship with other people, like I was saying, people that I may disagree with, but that I now have a common identity that hopefully we can draw on to build bridges across these differences that exist in this, you know, very diverse country, diverse in lots of different ways. And it's challenging sometimes to balance all of those different identities and you know, for immigrants to balance different citizenships that you have, attachments to different countries. But I think that's part of what makes this country a special place is building on that diversity and using that as a vehicle to move the country forward.
Dr. Singh, what about you? I know it's a big question what being an American means to you, and I know it's not just about voting, but I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Yes, you know, it's being able to vote is a big privilege because, you know, the country that we moved to from when we first came here, you know, women had absolutely no rights and no, you know, weren't allowed to vote. So I think it's really a privilege, and it is my duty to vote. And with that vote, I would, you know, like to vote for, you know, health care for everyone, because this is something I see, you know, on a daily basis where old and young patients, this is something, you know, foremost on a lot of people's minds. So, yes, you know, health care for everybody. And then even as a new immigrant becoming a citizen, I mean, we need to have, you know, smart and compassionate people in office who are able to, you know, take on these very tough immigrant issues. And, you know, and I want to be able to have a voice in things like climate change. So, yes, this is a, you know, really big step. And I really think, you know, this is something that every citizen should do.
Alex, what issues have been important to you this election season?
Really those same ones. Immigration has been important to me. Healthcare has been very important to me. I've been thinking about climate change and you know, as a political scientist, kind of putting on my political science hat, another issue that's been really important to me is the change in the discourse and the sort of polarization that's been happening in the way that people talk about politics and the way that the rhetoric has become very aggressive and sometimes mean or derogatory. And that's worrisome to me, too, and supporting candidates that don't engage in those kinds of practices, I think, in the long run is important for the health of the democracy so that we can have, you know, disagreements, but we can disagree civilly.
Can I ask you to put on your political scientist hat one last time and ask you one last question about how important you think it is for people to be hearing stories about why people vote as opposed to all of the rhetoric?
I think it's really important. I think that, you know, there are lots of different motivations that people have for voting. And so hearing that you don't have to be 100% certain, you don't have to know everything, right? This is this kind of feeling of efficacy of, you know, politics is just overwhelming, so I'm not going to participate, is a problem that exists in society. And I think it's important to hear stories from new voters who maybe share those feelings of uncertainty, right, and maybe feel a little overwhelmed by the political system, but nonetheless go out and participate so that people realize they're, you know, they're not alone and they should go out and they should get their voices heard. And, you know, one of the things we know from the research is that voting is habit forming. Once you start voting, you're more likely to continue voting. So, you know, getting over those hesitations, going out and voting, especially for the first time, is really important.
That's Alex Shishkovich, who just became a citizen. He also teaches, as you've been hearing, political science at the University of Illinois. I want to thank him, as well as Dr. Sunita Singh, who's a physician in Chicago, both of them voting for the first time tomorrow as American citizens. Both of you, thank you for being with me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thanks so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
That does it for us today. If hopefully that has inspired you to vote, and if you still have a couple questions, you can always go to our website, 21stshow.org. We've got lots of resources for you there, including a special election podcast that features interviews with the candidates for major offices here in Illinois. You can hear from especially all of our governor candidates, Governor Rauner, J.B. Pritzker, Cash Jackson, Sam McCann, in their own words, as well as the candidates for comptroller, for attorney general, and treasurer. It's about 15 minutes. Again, that's all at our website. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we are going to be talking to researchers who are working on a simpler and more environmentally friendly way to graze cows, and they're hoping that McDonald's is actually going to take the lead on it. And obviously, tomorrow's Election Day. It's also the anniversary this week, 35 years ago, of the horrific Hendricks family murders. We're going to revisit that story with Bloomington journalist Steve Vogel. It was a big story in central Illinois. Tomorrow evening, I'll be anchoring live statewide coverage as the election results come in. You can tune into this NPR station. Myself and Brian Mackey from Illinois Public Radio will be keeping you informed. They will also most likely be, your station will be hearing special coverage from NPR, so there'll be national coverage. We'll be bringing you local updates at the half-hour mark around 7:30, 8:30 or so, and we'll break in when we have news of who our next governor will be, and we'll also bring you those speeches of the winners and losers. Again, all the information is at our website at 21stshow.org. If you're looking for more voter information, we are a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Have a good day. See you tomorrow.